When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Want to teach your kids financial literacy but not sure where to start? Greenlight can help. With Greenlight, parents can keep an eye on kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens use a card of their own to build money confidence. As a parent, you can send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and more. It's a convenient way to run your household, customized to your family's needs, and the easy way to raise financially smart kids. Get started with Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/pod.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into Debate Night post-USDGC. It was quite an event. We were all down there, sans Connor, unfortunately, but joined by Brody and Silas here today. Today's episode, we're going to talk through the USDGC, talk about the Tour Championship Cup a little bit, see if Silas's mind changed at all being on the grounds, watching it happen. I did. I called it the Champions Cup. Tour Championship's what I meant.
Okay.
Although Champions Cup, I kind of like that.
You said Tour Cup.
The Tour Cup? I like that, too.
I think you call it the Tour Cup.
I think we changed the name. I'm sticking with it, Tour Cup. But, yeah, let's. You know what? Brody, let's have you recap your USDGC first. Then we can just kind of talk about USDGC as a whole and transition into Silas's experience and see if he if he still thinks the same as he thought last week.
Yeah, so I'm going to pull up my rounds here so I can kind of have a little bit more familiarity of some of the stuff. But yeah, overall, USDGC, I mean, it's an awesome course, a lot of fun because it's one of the few courses on tour. I feel like whenever we do get to a tour stop where the course is challenging, I always bring that up because it's so rare for us to play courses where you're constantly being challenged every single hole, and there's not a hole, maybe hole nine, maybe, but for a lot of people, not even hole nine, of where you can just take a second to breathe. Like, yeah. Every shot is demanding. Every shot is like, I have to execute this, or I can take a number. So, I think a lot of people are a little probably mentally tired today or yesterday rather than a lot of tournaments coming off of, just because it's an automatic grind 24/7 while you're out there. But my experience out there, I mean, obviously I did better than last year, so that's always good, you know, to improve on. Definitely didn't finish where I wanted to. I was pretty happy going into the weekend because I felt like I hadn't had a real great front nine, but I was playing the back nine pretty well. And so I felt like if I could just figure out the front nine on the weekend, I could maybe put myself in contention. Turns out that I would have had to, I mean, I think I was what, nine under, and Gannon ended up shooting. What would Gannon shoot to win? Do we know? 30 something?
I'll pull it up. He shot very hot final round. So
he shot 12 under with a double in the final. So he had I guess 13 birdies and an eagle, or 12 birdies and an eagle.
He shot 33 under to win.
33, yeah. So at the time, 9 under didn't seem that far off, because I think the lead was at maybe 15 or something. So I was only 6 back, and so I was like, if it gets windy, who knows? And we talked about this before about what we thought the low rounds were going to be. Practice was all windy.
Yeah.
Everything, like the lowest wind we had was maybe 8 or 9 miles per hour. The conditions out there, there was a couple times, you know, we would play 4 or 5 holes where the wind would pick up to 9. It would gust over 10 here and there. But the scoring conditions were the best they could have been this week. And I think that's why we saw people shoot as well as they did. So mm-hmm. We were pretty off in that, but I think we were expecting it to be a little bit windier and a little harder. But Yeah, looking at my rounds, one thing that I was really happy with is I only missed I missed one circle one putt on round two. I didn't miss a circle one putt on round one. Missed one on round two. Missed one on round three, and missed one on round four. So my circle one putting was 92%, which was fifth in the field. That was something that has been plaguing me all season. I want to say, like, some of these tournaments I was finishing like 120th or something in circle one X putting. So that's something I've been really working on. So I was happy with how I putted inside the circle. I ended up, it was something like, what was it? Yeah, I made 35 putts. So I was 35 of 38 inside the circle. So I was very happy with that. So that was good. OB shots kind of plagued me a little bit. Not so much in the sense of, like, that's why I didn't score well, because I only threw 12 OB shots, which was 18th in the field. So I wasn't littering them OB, but I was throwing OB shots when I was in really good position a lot of times. So like hole 11, I did that twice where I was in perfect position off the tee, and that should be an up and down for birdie. And I threw it OB, took a bogey. And that's two strokes right there that you cannot do on this course. But looking at it, the front seven is really the front. Yeah, the front seven really killed me. So round one, I played the front seven, one over. Round two, I played the front seven, one over. Round three, I played the front seven, one under. And then round four, I played the front seven, one over. To finish the tournament.
Two over.
10 under. Yeah. I was 10 under for the tournament. So, like, I played the back half of the course great. Very happy with how I did that. Obviously, there's some misses here and there that I need to clean up. But, I sent out a tweet after the tournament saying that this course really will expose you for what you're not confident in. And there were multiple times where the straight backhand shot was the ideal shot. You could get away with throwing a forehand, but the straight backhand was the ideal shot. And I wasn't confident in it. And I went forehand on hole 18. I think hole 18 is a straight backhand off the tee. Hole 1 is a straight backhand. Hole 4 is a straight backhand. There's a couple more maybe in between there, but I went forehand, and I think it was like a safer play in my position at that time, but for me to really attack the course and play the course the way to be in contention, I got to be able to throw a straight backhand. So that was huge. And then circle two putting, that was the other thing. I made 1 of 4 on round one. 1 of 4 on round two. Round three, I just didn't really have any circle two putts to even putt at, which was interesting. That might be off. And then I made 0 of 7 on round four. So those are things that I really need to be working on a lot this offseason.
Do you think that circle two putting goes up if you're still step putting?
Yeah, we talked about
that. Was there any in that range where you're like, if I was step putting, I think I'm banging those, or were they all like 50, 60 feet?
There was definitely obviously a handful of those that were 50 feet plus. I'm trying to remember hole 14. Oh, hole 14 was the scooper.
Yeah.
In round one. That's what that one was. I didn't make. And then hole 16 was like a 50 footer that I made. That was a really good putt. But that was coming off of three birdies. So I confidently threw that one in there. And then hole 8, I mean, I had a circle two putt every round, pretty much every round, almost every round on hole 18. And that
you just you lay that up unless you're going to win or something.
You just can't do that. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think there was a handful that maybe my step putt might have given me a better shot, but I also wasn't practicing my step putt prior to this event. So
yeah,
I was trying to make that switch to just more stand and deliver putting from distance. But I don't know, overall, it's one of those where I'll look back and there's a lot of what ifs, obviously. But I think for me, my big takeaway is this course is a course that I feel like I can be very successful at.
Yeah.
Just with how the play style, how it requires you to play a certain way. And I just have to get better. I'm just not good enough. I have to get better. So I got to put a lot of work in this offseason. So that way, when I get back here, I mean, there was a huge change in playing this course this year and playing this course last year.
Yeah.
Because like last year, I would actually argue and say that I actually probably played well based off of my skill set. And this year, I would say I didn't play that great based off my skill set. But I obviously got a lot more birdies and finished higher. But
this year, you actually had a overstable driver in your bag. So
that also very helpful. Yes.
That definitely very helped.
The flipping nuke as my overstable driver last year was a questionable choice at that.
Yeah, you definitely need that out here. The tournament as a whole, again, we talked about it on Grip Lock, but we kind of talk about Throw Pink Women's and USDGC is just one tournament. The FPO
that's
FPO
fine.
Side,
we can do that. We can
because
do that.
I mean, Throw Pink, I think, should be the major. I think that's at least my stance on it. I think it should be U.S. Women's, but Katrina Allen took it down. Kristen Tatar was able to come back and finish in second place, and then Henna Blommers rounded out third. So, pretty usual suspects overall. Top.
Well,
three.
I mean, the Katrina Allen situation, like that back and forth going into the final. I think it was round three, is what it was. That was some of the craziest back and forth I think I've ever seen in disc golf. Because
going into
at
round
one,
three?
No, during round three.
During round three, yes.
Because you had a stretch where Kat went, she parred hole five, she doubled hole six, parred seven, parred eight, parred nine, doubled 10, bogeyed 11. And in that stretch, you had Henna taking three birdies, you had Kristen taking three birdies and an eagle.
Yeah.
And so you essentially had, you know, what the tournament was essentially kind of, in our opinion at that time, like over. Like,
yeah. I'd have to go back, but it wouldn't surprise me if the commentators already called it done.
Yeah. I mean, it's
Cat.
With just how difficult the back nine plays for FPO, it's one of those where just if you just play for par, and then some of the FPO holes were so easy in the sense of like, being able to play safe and make birdies, right?
Yeah.
Some of the pars were super soft. I mean, hole nine was an outrageous, like that might have been one of the most outrageous things I've ever heard a commentator said, which is completely right. They weren't wrong, but where it's like, ooh, they just threw OB. They're going to have a putt for birdie now. Like that is just an outrageous statement, but yeah, that's just how the hole played. And so the lead was so big that I was like, man, if Kat literally just plays super smart on the difficult holes, because there are still obviously difficult holes out there, and then just plays her normal game on the holes that are scorable, it's seven strokes is going to be so hard for anyone. Because when you do play super aggressive out in USDGC, that's where you can take big numbers, and that's where, you know, you can get bit a little bit. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, looking at this, I mean, Kat, this is her first time winning since Idlewild, which is kind of crazy to think about. She just hasn't really been in the mix that much at a lot of these tournaments. And
no,
she just, I mean, her putting this week was phenomenal. She was draining everything from outside. And when she's making her putts like that, she's tough to beat. And,
yeah,
you know, I would say Kristen had a couple rough rounds. She ended up, what did she end up doing?
She lost nine strokes round one, two. It was Missy, but Katrina was right behind Missy. Kristen lost eight strokes round one to Katrina.
Yeah, round one.
But
killed
was
her.
Able to make up seven of those eight in round three.
Yeah.
But she lost another five. Looking at this, she lost another five. Kat on day two was when Kat really tore the course up, and as did Henna. But that's where Kristen lost another five. So Seven strokes, round three made it interesting, but not interesting enough to where it really came down to it.
Yeah, Hinnah went 10 under with a double. Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez. 63, and she was 63% circle one. She ended up missing three putts inside a circle.
On her 50, on that 10
to
under
shoot
round?
10 under. Shot three. Yeah, my goodness. She's one of those. Hinnah.
She could have got to like 15.
I got to say, after watching this, I know we talked about Kristen a lot. We talked about Evelina and stuff. I think now Hinnah has shown at USDGC and at Maple Hill, two of the more difficult courses on tour, she's shown that if she can get her putting dialed in a little bit, she's going to be up there. I mean, she's going to be up there, right?
Yeah. It's a lot like Katrina Allen was, I guess it was last year, where it was like, it's obvious, it's just one thing to fix. It's like, just fix that and you're there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's obviously not just that simple, but sounds it.
And Kat putted a lot better. She was second in, she was fourth in C1X gained strokes.
Yeah.
79%, 14% from circle two. But, yeah. Yeah, no, FPO this week was actually really fun and interesting to watch, just with how chaotic the leaderboard was going. You know,
yeah.
you just
never knew what was going on.
Yeah, you had no idea, and really it got, I mean, obviously seven strokes, I thought it was over. It wasn't, but, you know, with how the last couple holes played for some of the FPO players, you know, you have someone like Owen, for example. Owen took a 9 on hole 18. You know, there's Paige, this is final round. Owen took a 9. Kristen bogeyed. Obviously, she was playing super aggressive. Paige took a 7. Kat Merch took a 7. Jessica Weiss, 7. Rebecca Cox, 8. And then obviously we know how 17 plays. Now, I didn't realize this. Do you know that 17, they played 17 way different than MPO?
No.
So MPO, we throw three shots, right? You have three chances basically to get on. If you don't get on, then you have like a 65 footer from like the corner of the island. So 8-7,
basically.
8 is pretty much the highest you can take unless you run that putt.
Unless you throw that OB somehow, yeah.
Because then I don't even know if you advance.
I think you'd re-putt from the drop zone.
Potentially.
So you could still get up there. But
someone did take 11. Someone took an 11. That was, I think, the highest score taken on 17 for MPO. So I'm assuming they ran the putt and then did that. But 8 was pretty much standard what you were going to get. Now, FPO, if you miss the island the first throw, you go down to like the Fellberg layup spot.
Oh, a separate drop zone.
Yeah. So like where Fellberg would lay up was like, when he won it, I guess he laid up every round and he would just basically jump putt to like the gap and then basically just have a straight backhand hyzer down. So that was where you would take your third shot. And then if you missed that, you would take your fifth shot, I believe, on the island.
Okay.
So a six was basically the highest you would take for FPO, and 8 was pretty much the highest you could take for MPO. But I thought that was interesting how they changed that.
Makes sense.
But yeah, I mean, I do want to talk about some other, let me see what else I have on here. I think, I had something about Paige Hsu being back in the mix a little bit. Now, obviously she didn't play that great final round, shot 7 over, but going into the final round, she was kind of
in the mix.
She was in the mix a little bit for let's see here. She was, I guess, top 15, but that she's someone that hasn't really been on tour at all this year. And,
she Monday qualified.
Oh, she was the Monday qualifier.
Yeah.
I was talking about that. I wanted to know, do you know who Monday qualified for MPO? We wanted to see who was the highest, like who finished the best for MPO.
Posted it. I don't know if he finished the best, but I can find who Monday qualified.
But it was good to see. It was good to see Paige Zhu back in the mix. Also, good to see Haley King, someone that we haven't seen on tour in a really long time. She was, I think she skipped out on the last couple. I don't think she played GMC. I could be wrong, but I know she skipped out. I believe on MVP.
Yeah, she didn't play much this season. Believe she just recently got a new job in disc golf. If I remember correctly, I had to look at her Instagram. I vaguely remember her posting something about it. So Monday qualifier for MPO was Ian Burchett, Joseph Anderson, Aaron Doyle, Alex Zeros, and Max. I don't know how to pronounce the last name.
Okay, hold on.
Rigetnig.
Okay, so
that's what it looks like.
Alex Zeros, is that what you said?
Yes.
So he must have just had the round of his life because he finished dead last at 49 over.
All right, well, he was one of the Monday qualifiers.
Then you have Aaron Doyle.
Yep.
93rd plus 25. Ian Burchett, 92nd plus 24.
Okay.
Who's the other one?
Joseph Anderson.
Ooh, he might be the winner. Max is one of them?
Yeah.
83rd plus 16.
And then Joseph Anderson.
Oh, I'm scoring up a little bit. Ooh, all right, plus 13. 74.
That's not bad.
Yeah. All right. So, you know, I think that just shows you, though, like, what that shows you, and it's not – obviously, all those players are very good to be able to show up and play well the round that matters the most to qualify in. But I think what that shows you is how big of a gap you can have on a course like this. You know, you can go out and shoot 5 under one day and then the next day go out and not play that much differently, but just be a little off and shoot 5 over. And yeah, I mean, 4 rounds on the course like this, that's the crazy thing. 4 rounds is, and Gannon was pretty consistent. And then obviously he went berserk mode on round 4, but he shot 58, 58, 55. And then berserked out at 52. But, you know, you'll see people with big swings. I mean, Paul had a 61 and then a 55 and then 55, 55, 58. So he had like one round that he wasn't shooting on all cylinders.
Yeah. Well, Ricky had 56, 57, 65 round 3 and then back to 56 round 4.
Mm-hmm. Nate Sexton, who I do want to talk about here in a second. He went 62, 61, and then just 55, 58, just came to play on the weekend. You got Gavin Babcock with a 62 first round, 62 final round, and a 57 and 58 in the middle. So, it's a course that, like you can't, like I said, you just can't take a breath. You can't take any time. So, let me see if there was anything else FPO I wanted to talk about. With just finishes. Oh, we got to talk about Kristen. 100% podium finishes this year on tour.
Yeah.
Never finished off a podium. And this was a tournament that I think after round 1, people were like, ooh, we're finally seeing Kristen like be human.
Yeah.
She's going to finish outside of top 10. And then she just battled her way back. And honestly had a lot of, had chances to win. Like,
yeah, no, she did.
I mean, her upshot on hole 12 hurt her really bad. That cost her what, 2 shots there. I mean, there were mistakes on the final round that were un-Kristen-like, I guess you could say. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is what we're to expect next year as well, of where if she doesn't play well, she gets second.
I mean, it's tough to know what could happen this offseason because, like, there's so many players in FPO that have the skill, they just aren't consistent out there. So, like, Paige obviously has the skill. Kat obviously has the skill. This year, the first time I think in recent memory, you can say, like, they just weren't consistently at the top. Henna, obviously. Evelina. Haley King when she's out there, Owen Scoggins at the right course, Missy Gannon at the right course. So it's not like these players, there's like this gap that they have to overtake skill-wise. There is a slight one, but it's more if they just get consistent this offseason and they come out next year. Because even some players like Kona, we saw glimpses last year. I wouldn't really say we saw many glimpses this year of that same type of play to where like
Kona had a couple – Kona had a couple glimpses like in rounds. She couldn't do it for a full tournament, but there was a couple times where she was shooting like the hot round and then maybe would take a big number or something. But
yeah, so when
like,
you
she
have
was
that,
still getting a lot of birdies, but
when you have that long list of players that are all like there, just have like a little bit to go, it's tough to think, oh, well, Kristen, that's just how Kristen's going to be next year too. Could she? Obviously, because Kristen might not, probably isn't at her ceiling. So she
I was
going to
say, she could even get better. Yeah.
It just depends a lot. Like, a lot of decisions are going to be made this offseason because, like, it could just be someone else next year that comes out and does it.
I think this is one of those, and I, you know, we'll talk a little bit about how much money you can make on FPO, right? Like, because I think that's a big difference between several years ago for obviously for MPO, but you know, FPO is definitely accelerating, I would say, faster in their payouts over the last couple of years than MPO is. And so, you know, money drives the world, right? And so if you're not on the pro tour right now and you're looking at it, you could be like, holy cow, I can make actually a decent amount of money on in FPO. So this offseason is going to, I think you're right, this offseason is going to be one of where you're going to have players like Henna, like Evelina, of where, hey, let's work an hour to 2 hours every single day this offseason on putting.
Yeah.
You know, Evelina, let's change my form. My form right now is not great for pressure situations. So let's change it and let's see how my form or let's see how I do next year with a new putting form, new confidence, and practicing an hour or two. Because, I mean, for me, that was a clear sign of, you know, going 120th in Circle One putting to top 10 this tournament. The only thing I changed was I started practice putting again for like way longer than I used to. And after my rounds and stuff, like after every round at USCGC this week, I putted for like another hour because it was just one of those where it's like, I got to get the reps in. You got to get the reps in. And so I think that's huge for some of the players out there. And then I think on the flip side, I think like a Missy Gannon, if she developed a forehand, right? Like a 300 foot forehand. 280 foot forehand. That she was
300 foot forehand. I need to develop that thing.
Come on, man. If she can develop a forehand this offseason, I think that's going to bode huge for her.
Yeah.
Going in. Same thing with like Paige.
Paige. That's the big thing. I think
if Paige can develop a forehand and not have these, you know, turnover shots, because we've talked about this a little bit of how some holes are designed for that forehand flare skip at the end, that movement, and you cannot replicate that the same way with a backhand turnover. Yeah. So, you know, you got someone like a Holland Hanley, like she's someone that could have an incredible off season, and she's someone that we have seen. She finished ninth in this tournament. She shot 5 under her final round, finished ninth. She moved up 7 spots. She's someone that can all of a sudden come back on the scene next year and have a massive improvement. And then who knows? There are some people that we might not even know yet that are grinding out there this off season and putting themselves in position. So,
well, there's I want to talk a little bit. You said you're talking about the money in FPO, and it made me think because last year, correct me if I'm wrong. Last year, once Missy Gannon won 30 grand at the Pro Tour Championship, she set the most earnings for FPO. Correct? Kristen's already passed her prior to the Pro Tour Championship
and didn't play everything.
So Kristen's already at 68 grand made this year without playing anything, meaning, and the previous record that Missy set last year was 67. If Kristen wins the Pro Tour Championship, she'll be over 100,000 in prize money this year.
Yes.
Which obviously a big 35% of that would be the Pro Tour Championship. But like you said, Kristen didn't even play everything. Like she missed two majors. She missed the European Open and U.S. Women's. Two majors
which,
that could have made her a few thousand bucks each.
I mean, that's probably 14K at least. Like, we can probably put 14K in the bank for that.
Yeah. So, like, if she does that, then she's already at like 80 grand.
Yeah.
So, like, that just shows how fast this is advancing. Because last year you have the record set. This year someone breaks the record, possibly by 40 grand. And then, you know, who's to say someone doesn't break it again next year? Now, Kristen cleaned house, obviously. Everything she showed up to,
yeah,
but, first, second, or third.
But time out. When you're looking at, because I have this pulled up because I didn't want to talk about the cash situation. So looking at the top 10 right now, you have Paul at 78K, Ricky at 68K. You have Kristen at 62. So she got third overall.
Well, now it's 67. Now it's 68.
Oh,
that's well, that, I guess they don't have USDGC. In
yeah, this is before USDGC.
This is before USDGC.
Then you got Simon at 59, Paige at 55. So right there, you have two FPO players in the top five.
Yeah.
Calvin at 53, Burr at 48, Dickerson at 45, and then Owen at 41. So you have, and then Kat at 40.
And Kat's about to go up another 10. Kat's going to be a
sure.
Favorite. Yeah.
So, and then else on, and then obviously it drops a little bit. And then the next one's Missy at 37, who's a couple spots, only two spots down from Kat. And then you got to go down another another two spots for Val at 33. So, like, I mean, the difference in MPO and FPO payouts right now is not that significant. It really isn't. And when we look at payouts and stuff, a lot of times with just how different the field size is, you know, playing in the FPO field, like if you are a decent player, you can make a lot of money right now. So that, but I think that's good. I think that's a good thing. I think you want to have that enticing of like, hey, I'm a decent local pro. You know, I'm cashing at all my A tier events and I'm winning and like, let me go out and tour a little bit and test it. And I think, you know, I think we saw that like someone like Macy, she tested that last year and now she's at more events this year. And I think hopefully we see that more next year of where, some FPO players are like, hey, let me just test the waters. I'm going to play in these two or three events that are kind of somewhat close to me. And let me see where I'm at. And if they have good finishes, then, you know, maybe they start touring more next year. So, yeah, I just thought that was fascinating to see the amount of money you can make on tour this year.
Yeah, no, for sure. Now, on the MPO side.
Yeah, let's talk MPO.
Gannon obviously took it down. Everyone's posting he's the youngest USDGC champion. Surely he's the youngest major champion. I mean, I don't know how to look that up.
Well, the problem with that is you got like what 15 junior 15. Aren't those majors?
Throw those things out. That's not.
I know.
But like, that's,
I know, but they're probably counting that.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, if you count that, then obviously, you know,
yeah,
sure, Gannon's not the youngest major champion ever. But AM majors aren't pro majors. So like,
quick time out though. I do. We need to promote just before it gets too long in the podcast and people, you know, our haters stop listening. We got to promote the call in. We're taking your guys' calls this Thursday night at
7 p.m. Eastern.
Thursday night, 7 p.m. Eastern. All you need to do is have a Twitter account. Everyone can create a Twitter account. You can have an egg. Doesn't really matter. Takes 5 seconds. So there really isn't a reason not to have one. This is the easiest way of doing it for everyone. And just create a Twitter account. Be ready for the link to be sent out at 7 p.m. And just join the link and you'll jump into
a Twitter space.
And then you just like request to talk. You'll get thrown up to the top. I'll see that you requested. We'll bring you in and then you can debate me and Hunter on whatever topics it is. And here's the thing too. Like, this is you guys coming to the table to debate us in the sense of, like, what your topic is. Because I know sometimes people will be like, all right, I'm on here. What do you want to talk about? And it's like, I don't know. Everything I've said, I've agreed on. So, like, you have to come to the table of what we've said or whatever. This is giving you a platform to do that. And obviously this past week there was tons of people that – wanted to talk to me about dress code. So hopefully some of those people come on and we can talk more about dress code and what should be worn and what shouldn't be worn. But yeah, we haven't done this in a long, long time.
Yeah.
So hopefully the people that And this is what I'll say. The people that want to debate us on certain things, we'll kind of give them first line. Like, they'll skip the line and get up first. If you have a question, I would say just hold off on that for a while. And then we will probably take some questions and stuff at the end.
Yeah.
But we want to try to have the people that disagree with us. You know, I've changed my mind on a lot of things this year. And I think I've definitely have become more open to some ideas that I definitely was more closed-minded off to. So who knows? You might come on with a great point and I might be like, yep, you're right. I was wrong. Next topic.
Boom.
See you Thursday at 7. All right.
Thursday at 7. There you go.
Back to MPO.
Gannon Burr takes it down. Youngest USDGC champion for sure. Most likely the youngest professional major champion of all time. I hope someone corrects me in the comments, because I'd love to see a 16-year-old that won something previously. But 17 years old to be doing this. Definitely, I mean, it's hard to think it's not the first of many times he's going to win majors. Because, I mean, the kid just has the clutch gene. Like, there was so many putts that, like, hole 14 is the first one that comes to my mind where, like, if he misses hole 14, probably over. Because he's up on the hillside, the way he's running it, probably going into the hazard. Nicklaus was close. Nicklaus ended up missing that putt, but Nicklaus was pretty close. Tough to imagine he's missing that if Gannon doesn't make his. That could literally be like 3-stroke swing there. Another big putt on 17.
He was the only one to eagle 10.
Yeah, 10. Because at that time, Paul and Calvin obviously were still in the mix, and it was like, they just got it. I mean, you're stepping up to it thinking Paul's going to put this on 10. That's kind of how he was getting his round going this weekend. It felt like was he got close on 10, made the eagle putt, and the rest of the round started going better.
Yep.
And Calvin and Paul just, I don't even know what their shots were doing. Gannon was apparently the only one that had the right wind read or something, because
what? So,
Calvin
so Paul
even messed up the drop zone.
Yeah, I was going to say, so Paul missed, went drop zone, got up and down for par. What did Calvin do to get a 7?
So Calvin went off the tee, turned over way too much.
So missed right.
Like, cruised to the right. Drop zone, same thing, turned over way too much. So that throw again from the drop zone. So that's 2, 4, 5. He must have missed the putt to take the 7. Yeah.
That's a 5-shot swing with him in game.
He was doing
there.
That a lot, because even on 14, he did a similar thing, right, Silas? Like, he just turned it over way too much, Calvin? Yeah. He just
on hole 14.
Yeah, way right.
On hole 14, he's one of the few people that take the straight at it line.
Yeah, and so he
not a lot of people throw that.
Where he just like turned it over too much. Whereas Gannon just threw a sick flex shot on 10, and yeah, picked up some momentum. Like, he has time and time again, he was faced with a clutch putt that was like, you need to hit this, and every time he did.
So the lead card finished all top four, right? Gannon,
yes.
Nicklaus, Calvin, Paul. So Paul was one of, I mean, and we've talked about this too. Like, the starting stretch at USDGC is very difficult. The first four holes, not so much difficult in the sense of like you can take big numbers, but very hard birdies to get.
Mm-hmm.
Paul was one over through the first four. Calvin was even through the first four. Nicklaus was one under through the first four, and Gannon was 3 under through the first four. He gained 4 strokes on Paul, on Calvin, and 1 on Nicklaus.
He hit that long putt on 1 to start his round. He was like short of the log.
He was short of the log.
Yeah, and drilled that.
God, I saw that. Well, yeah. I mean, I saw the highlight of that. That was, yeah, I mean, he was in straight aggressive mode, but I think maybe spectators or maybe fans realize this at this time, but you have to be so good at putting.
Yeah.
If you want to win one of these things and it's not windy, because that was the thing. When it's windy, putting is way more like strategic of like how aggressive you want to be, or like changing your putt so that you give a chance to make it, but it doesn't get thrown away by the wind. When it's not windy, like it was this tournament, it just shows you how good everyone is at the top at putting, and how you literally just have to freaking chuck them in there. And if you're not, you're not going to win. You're just not going to win.
Yeah.
Crazy. crazy. Yeah, I mean, the kid's good. The kid's very good. It's no surprise. We've known this for a long time.
Well, that's what's so weird.
He's been in contention forever at almost every tournament, it feels like.
It felt like a long time coming, and then he won, and I was like, man, finally. And then I was like, Hunter, he's 17.
Yeah.
Why do I have this feeling of, like, finally, like, this was such a long time coming when this is his, like, first year fully on tour, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, even last year when he jumped on the scene at Waco, he was like in the mix there. So I mean, he's been in the mix for the last 2 years at a lot of tournaments, and I think that's where it feels like, ah, man. But it's like you said, it's not like a journeyman that's been on tour for 7-8 years and then finally gets his win.
Yeah,
he's just had like the career a 7 or 8 year like veteran pro has had on tour of where they're in the mix maybe a couple times every year.
Yeah.
He's had that career in a year and a half now.
Yeah.
So that's where it's just like, it feels elevated and fast, but I mean, hats off to him. And I mean, going down the list, you know, Nicklaus put an incredible performance out there.
Yeah.
He was Mr. Consistent, 56, 57, 56, 55.
Yeah, that's what it takes out there. I mean, because he basically made Gannon. He like showed up and was like, "You're gonna have to do something crazy to beat me," and Gannon did. But like that's what it takes at USDGC. Is like that's why Sexton typically. I mean, this year he still got himself back in the mix, but historically when he's on full on tour, he is Mr. Consistent, and eventually he won one because it's like one of these years, challenge someone, say do something crazy to beat me, and they're not gonna be able to.
Yeah, they're going to take a 6 or something on 17. And Nicklaus was right there. Literally, he executes his putt on 14. He executes his putt on 17.
And he wins.
He wins.
Yeah, but so, I mean, which I still think the 17 putt was far enough out that he might not hit it if Gannon doesn't go first. 14, I think if Gannon doesn't make that putt, Nicklaus makes that all day.
But those are both putts that he feels like he should make.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's he's banged him in the face first.
Yeah, he's going to be leaving the tournament being like, man, it was right there for the taking, you know? But
and he's young too, isn't he? He's like 20?
20. He's 20. Yeah. He's 20. Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
The future of disc golf is wild. Because we also had Jake Mon burst on the scene, who's also, I think, 17.
Let's get to him in a little bit because he's a little bit further down the leaderboard. I do want to go down the leaderboard a little bit here. Calvin Heimberg, obviously, no surprise.
No.
Last year, probably should have won it last year, but had that terrible, unfortunate break happen on 17 where his putt like stood up and rolled OB. But Calvin's always going to be in the mix at this tournament. I feel like it's going to be rare for him not to be. His game suits this course very well. And, you know, he's an incredible putter and it's no surprise he takes third. The one surprise, and obviously we talked a little bit about already on hole 10, the one surprise is he was one over par on hole 10.
That is very surprising.
So even if he does take that 7, right, you would think that the previous rounds he would have had one or two eagles, a birdie, whatever. No, he was 2 under going into he was 2 under going into the final round.
And it was 3 over 10. In the final round, yeah.
And then 3 over.
You know, because Nicklaus's play was, I'm laying up every round.
That's what
lay
I did.
Up, lay up, yeah. Birdie. Lay up, lay up, birdie. And that's a very easy way to do it.
I think that might have been a mistake, though.
I agree. I think, like,
not for Nicklaus, because I think for Nicklaus, well, I think also that distance is that distance that is kind of right on the iffiness for him, probably. Yeah, I was saying it was a mistake for me. I think I should have gone for it.
When you said you didn't go for it, I was very surprised.
Yeah, I think it's one of those where it's like you either go for it every single round or you lay up every single round.
No, yeah, like I don't think you
just have that mindset.
Because it's midway in the round, so it's like it's almost too early to be like, unless you're 5 or 6 back and you know I got to do something, if you're like in the mix, then it's too early in the round to change your game plan and be like, I need to be really aggressive here, I feel like, where it falls, but...
15 eagles are on that hole basically 15% of the field eagled that hole on the final day.
Yeah. It's definitely an eagleable hole. Joel Freeman, you know, sniped the course record at 52 only for Gannon to tie it with a double bogey the final round. Yeah, but that what the heck? Shot he just... Joel Freeman back up into the mix. He went 65-60, 52, and then 57 to kind of hang around.
What the heck? That was an incredible round. And then obviously Ricky, too, looked like he was just going to run away with the thing potentially after the first 2 days.
Well, after 2 days, he was tied for the lead, or he was in the lead?
He was tied for the lead with Jake.
Yes, Jake Mon. Yeah,
yeah, and so everyone was like, Jake's going to fall off, so Ricky's got this, right? Yeah.
I saw a stat where when Ricky was tied for the lead through two rounds of a four-round major, it was a 50% chance win percentage, historically. So I think it was on the Heiser Club Mailbag, our Patreon podcast, we flipped a coin and said, heads, Ricky wins, tails, Ricky loses, and the coin landed on tails. It was right.
Wow.
Think about
it. Paul finished top five, fourth, no surprise there. Matty O sneaks into a top five.
Yeah, and again, that last round, he kind of slowly got up in there. Yeah.
No surprise. Matty O is just very, very good at disc golf. Isaac Robinson, another person that's very good on this course, obviously a very good disc golfer as well, winning on tour this year and being kind of in the mix at some of the other majors as well. But he finished sixth. We talked about Ricky at seven. Joel Freeman, we talked about at seven. Kyle Klein, who was in that playoff last year with Paul, finished ninth. Honestly, he could have probably been in the mix too, but it looks like he was just kind of he has had too many bogeys. He I don't know if it was because of OB. Let me look real quick. He only threw two OB shots the final day. But yeah, I mean, there was he went on a stretch the final day where he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 birdies in a row in the middle of the middle, which is impressive. That middle stretch is not the easiest stretch on the course, so. And then last to talk about going down the leaderboard, for me at least, maybe there is some other people in there you want to talk about, but Nate Sexton, playing just good enough to squeak in a solo 10th, which now is 14 top 10s in majors.
14. In a row?
Yes. In a row.
That's what I'm saying. Nate Sexton is just Mr. Consistent. Like, he just, especially at USTGC, you just kind of know he's going to find a way to be, I wouldn't say in the mix, but he's going to find a way to be up there. Like, it seems like every year that's just going to happen.
Here's the thing, too, is like, these stats are actually starting to get more and more impressive, right? Yep. If you told me, you know, the Kristen Tatar stat, right? Of where the last person to do what Kristen Tatar did was in 2015, Katrina Allen.
Yeah.
And like, okay, hats off to Katrina, great season, but 2015 FPO is nothing like 2022 FPO.
Yeah.
So like, you can't compare the two and saying like, oh, they were just as good as seasons. Like, no. And I think it's the same thing of where, you know, if someone was like, yeah, well, this person, though, had 20 top 10s in a row. And it's like, okay, from what years? And they're like, from 1990 to 2000. It's like, they're competing again. I mean, they had to beat, what, like two people to get in a top 10?
Yeah.
Like, this is, I mean, there's a lot of good players that did not make the top 10 this week.
No, that's what I was going to, like, when I was looking down the leaderboard, what I always like to do a term like this, where it is so many variance is like go the opposite direction. Which players surprised me with how played.
You want to start from the bottom and go up?
That's what I always like doing. I already did it a little bit. First I'll say Chandler Kramer surprised me.
Mainly because
typically this is a tournament that forehand players do well.
Nope.
Yeah. Nate Sexton.
No. Time out. Me and Ezra had this conversation for over two hours yesterday.
This is a forehand tournament.
We went through the course. We went through the course and said if your backhand and forehand are equivalent, okay, there's no difference, what is the better shot? This is from tee shots and upshots. There were 18 backhands, 9 forehands. And this is our argument. A backhand is a better throw than a forehand.
Correct. You have more control over it.
Because here's the thing. When you say 18 backhands to 9 forehands, you would think, okay, well, if you're lefty, right, it would be 9 backhands and 18 forehands. No. It was the exact opposite. It was almost the same of where it was 18 backhands with lefty, 9 forehands with lefty. And it's because the backhand is just a better throw.
Here's what I'll say. The backhand is a better throw, 100%. You have more spin control, more speed control, more angle control, all of that. But with the more capability also comes more that could go wrong. The forehand is a more consistent throw, I would say, to where if like that's why Nate Sexton always does consistently good out here is there's a lot of holes that you can just chip forehands. Just chip a forehand, putt for birdie or little upshot par. I think you're less likely to blow up if you're throwing more forehands.
We were going off of, like, obviously, I don't know how he played hole five. I don't know if you watched him. I don't know if he chips.
I didn't watch him, no. I'd imagine he'd go forehand.
Yeah, he chips a forehand and just lays up for, well, let's see. Let's see what did he ever birdie hole five? He parred it in round. I'll just look at round four and round three because those are the rounds that you would think he'd be the most aggressive. He birdied it. All right, so maybe he is. I mean, that is a backhand, 100%. That upshot over the water is a backhand. You do not want to throw a forehand because if you're trying to birdie it, throwing forehand, you're over OB the whole time.
Yeah.
And if you don't get back, you're just rethrowing where the back end, you can at least go over the land and get up there. But no, we went through and literally thought like hole one is a backhand. Even though I went forehand all four rounds, that's just because I'm a scaredy cat and I was terrified of missing the Mando. Hole one's a backhand. And there's a lot of holes like that of where the backhand is the play. Hole 16 is a backhand. You can park it with a forehand. You can park it with a forehand.
Historically, it's been a forehand.
You can, but it is a backhand this year. It's a backhand.
I mean, maybe this year. Maybe.
Hole 18 is a backhand. That tee shot is a backhand.
Yes, but you can still – like what I'm saying is like all these are a backhand, but if you have a good enough forehand, I think you'll be more consistently good with the forehand. Like you might not park it like 16. You might not park it every time, but you're probably going to be OB less with a forehand.
No, highly disagree. You'll be OB more with a forehand. Yes, because it's a much tighter gap. If you clip one of those trees, you drop down the hazard. If you push it too far, you drop down the hazard.
I don't know. I disagree. I think you can shank your back.
You can shank your backhand.
It doesn't. It never makes sense that it's a forehand tournament. That's the thing.
I know.
But you think through it. It never makes sense. But year after year.
Do you want to go through it right now?
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't make sense. It's a forehand tournament. But you watch it and you watch forehand players dissect it. It's a forehand tournament. You're not going to convince me. You could read me every stat. You could look at everything in the world.
No. This is why you think it's a forehand tournament, though. It's more forehand dominant. Like it's more an advantage for people that have good forehands than most courses. That's why you think it. But it's still backhand. Backhand, you're throwing backhands. If you're lefty, or honestly, it's a lefty backhand course is really what it is. Because lefty backhands, we went through it, is so nasty on so many of these holes. A lefty backhand is so on hole 12, a lefty backhand is disgusting. You don't have to push that tree on the right because that's super dicey. And it's coming into the hillside. You can get way up there. And then you can throw a lefty backhand upshot where you're coming in from the flat part and not having to come in on the hill. I mean, a lefty backhand on this course is disgusting. And but no, a righty forehand is not.
Okay.
And
anyway, so we'll scroll farther down.
Chandler Kramer shot 15 over. Yes. And he's a very, very good disc golfer.
That's why I was surprised because it's clearly a forehand tournament and he played very bad. Let's see.
Scrolling didn't one of you guys pick Silas Schultz? Isn't that?
He was my dark horse pick. We're not going to talk about him, man.
Okay.
We're not going to talk about it. We're just going to ignore it. Score right by him. Kohling, surprised. Simon Lazat, very surprised. Simon was a player that I thought he could do something out here. Obviously, I don't think that's any.
You skipped past the second place world champ. Second place at Worlds. Aaron Gossage.
I was saying people are surprised.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't. Yeah, that didn't surprise me. No offense to Aaron Gossage, but like, if he comes first, I'm not surprised. If he comes 120th, I'm not surprised.
Gotcha. Kohling, obviously. Kohling, past champion.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Greg Barsby surprised me only because he was in the top 20 at one point, right?
I played with him in the final round.
Yeah, and then the final round, I mean.
It's USDG seed, man. He got USDG seed. Hole 11, I think he threw his tee shot OB, then threw his upshot OB, took a double. Hole 12, I think it took him three throws to get on to inbounds. So he was going for the birdie, took three throws to get inbounds, and then he got hole 17. You know, it took him three shots to get on there. So
the last one, it
can happen real quick. That's the thing; it can happen real.
It takes two holes to throw everything off.
Yeah, he was one under going through 10. He was one under going through 10 and finished 10 over. I mean, it can happen so fast out there. Felberg, surprise with Felberg or not so much anymore.
I'm surprised he shot a one under. No offense to Felberg, but just like, I mean.
Gibson?
He's a vet. Gibson was the last one I was going to say.
Last one?
Mainly because he didn't cash. He missed cash. And I feel like this is
What was cash?
Cash was 40th place.
Six under? What was cash last? Well, last year the conditions were way harder.
Yeah.
So you can't really
Gibson was the last one that surprised me. I mean, he had a 57 in there, so he had a good round, but he went 65, 57, 71, 60.
That's kind of nuts to think about, like, going into the tournament being like, six under is going to cash at USDGC. It's like, oh, man.
Yeah, and like if you told a player that, a lot of players like Drew obviously is like, I don't care about cashing, like I want to win. So he still would have been aggressive. But if you told some players like, hey, you can cash USDGC just shooting a six or seven under, and you're like, oh, then you think
it's
about
not
the
that
course.
Easy.
You think
it's
about the course a lot differently though. No, but some players
you do for
the course,
sure.
Some people think of the course of like, I'm gonna try to birdie like 15 of the holes out there. I'm trying to birdie, but you realize.
Yep.
If I just guarantee myself birdie, which you can't ever guarantee, but like there's a few holes out there you're like, I have a really good shot at birdieing these, and then playing these holes for par, it's a lot different story.
I would say there's two holes that you can be like, I should birdie these every time. Nine and ten.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. But I'm saying so if you play the course, you play 10 for the birdie every time, you know. Heck, if you're going super safe mode, you can literally lay up on 7, not even challenge the Mando. You can throw a mid on 6
and, then like a
and four, have a jump
then have like a 45 footer.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I tried
if you play for par.
I tried the mid on 6, went OB. So not the greatest layup play.
Sorry, soft spot.
That OB comes in quite a bit there on the right. So I thought I was playing the safe mid throw, and then I just threw it OB, which is the absolute worst.
Yeah, that's brutal. When you're like,
safe shot ever.
I should have just went for it and went OB.
Yeah, what the heck am I doing?
all right, well, unless you have anything else before we go to Silas,
because I think Silas should wrap us up on USDGC. I've got a couple more topics on USDGC before we go into the tour championship mode. Okay, and then I think we end it. I think we end today's podcast talking about the PDGA survey. Only fitting to end it with the big story. Distance contest. Were you surprised at all with the distance contest on
like
either FBO? No, I wasn't surprised with David Wiggins winning.
No,
the guy throws.
I've been telling people,
David Wiggins throws farther than anyone on this planet. Okay.
Yeah, he throws very,
it's not,
very, very
it's not close. It's not close. And he's consistent. That's the other thing. He doesn't need to have, he doesn't need to have some crazy throw and be like, I caught the angle. He throws just really freaking far.
Yeah. He just gets the disc.
Albert Tam might be the most impressive though, in the sense of like what he looks like doing versus how far it goes.
Yeah. He doesn't look like he's throwing nearly as hard as he ends up throwing.
Correct, and it just launches out of his hand. Ella Hansen threw. Did she throw over 6?
552.
Okay, but
what I will say did surprise me.
That was a bomb.
Was David Wiggins throwing 698 feet? It's like I saw the stat 698, and I immediately was like, it's got to be slightly downhill. And I asked him. He said it was a slight helping wind.
It was slight helping wind,
He's like I got behind it. He was pretty proud of it.
It might have been 5 miles per hour. It was not super windy of where you were like, oh, records are going to be set today.
Yeah, 700 feet, 698, so 2 feet shy. But 700 feet, I mean, go out in a field and just look at that. Just like go walk 700 feet.
Try to throw two shots 700 feet.
Yeah.
Try to do that.
Yeah, like if you – I don't think like until I saw him in person – Like, I had seen some pros throw like over 600 and stuff, but he came here and threw in the Lynchburg College Field.
Yeah.
And threw 655 is what he ended up throwing. And like watching that in person, it's just unfathomable what that disc was doing and how far away it was going.
It goes so far.
Yeah.
The one surprise I would say of everyone is probably Adam Hammes. That's someone that doesn't really get talked about too much on tour as like a bomber. And he threw like 670 or something.
Yeah, he got up there.
So, that's always fun. And then, you know, you got to see those guys after the tournament was over, just launch them over the road. Like over the road.
Yeah.
Just launching them. AB was doing his 360s. And those are also discs that are not.
No, I was going to say, they typically give them like 150 gram bosses and stuff.
They were not.
Players have no idea what the disc is about to do, don't know how it's going to flip. Yeah,
their first couple throws were absolutely atrocious.
It takes them a little bit to learn it, yeah.
And I don't like that.
Well, I guess it's because they don't want them to throw their disc in the water, so it makes sense.
What they should do, though, is give them those discs and let them warm up with them.
Yeah.
And then bring the 10 discs that they warmed up with over. Because after throwing those 10 times, you're going to know what they do. And so at least you're not, like, having the first couple, like, just dumped in the water.
The first couple always are like, oh. And they're like, and the pros are always like, I thought that was going to flip more, or wow, that flipped way more than I thought. And then they adjust, AB, and then it goes crazy.
AB almost cleared the water on a roller angle. Like, it literally flipped immediately out of his hand and still almost cleared the water, which might have been the more impressive shot.
Imagine if that roller landed.
Okay, do we want to talk about Colt Montgomery's post at all or no?
I mean, we can. Nope. I tweeted about it. The tweet got a lot of likes, I think.
Did you guys talk about it on Grip Locked?
No, it was after Grip Locked, I believe.
Okay. I mean, this, we don't have to necessarily talk about him per se, but we can talk about like the idea of that. Because I will say he might not be the only player to have those opinions on this course as it being gimmicky.
No, he definitely isn't.
Which is different than janky. Let's just, you know, those two words are way different. Because I was talking to someone yesterday that had a very, very strong opinion on this course. Now, this is what I will say. I'm not sure how well some players do at being able to remove themselves from their performance, whether it's good or bad.
Yes.
Because I do think some players perform well at certain tournaments and think the tournament is incredible. And I think some players perform poorly at tournaments and think the tournament is terrible. Myself, for example, it took me some time to think about it. After DDO, where I got third, my best finish ever, I was like, these courses are awesome. They make you play disc golf, yada, yada, yada. It took me a while to realize, wait a second, these courses actually aren't that good. It was just extremely windy and caused for a really crazy challenge that made you have to think every single shot. You couldn't take a breath. You had to like position really well. You had to be super, super, super smart about your angle control. You had to be super smart with how you were putting. And when I went back to Worlds, it was very apparent like, oh, when the wind is down, these courses kind of lose a lot of their
Yeah.
Right? I think that's difficult. I think it is difficult for people, because I fell in the same trap. I think it's difficult for people to take a step back and actually like look at the course for what it is and not how you play it. Or not how whether it suits your game or doesn't suit your game. For example, people know that I'm not the greatest woods golfer in the world. I think Champions Cup is up there, W.R. Jackson, as one of the better courses.
Absolutely.
I think Northwood Black is up there at one of the better wooded courses. Like, do those courses technically suit my game? No. Courses like Vegas probably suit my game the most, where I'm just throwing big hyzers, you know, 450 feet. But I'll be the first to tell you, like, Innova is a good course out there. Like, the Innova course is a solid course. But Factory and what's the other one? Crap. What's the
Infinite.
Other course?
Is it Infinite course?
Infinite. Yeah. Those courses are trash. Those courses are trash. So, like, and it's the exact opposite, too. Like, today, or not today, but when we played Reedy Creek, when we played Reed Creek, we all enjoyed it. It was a really fun course. If that course was on tour, it's a trash course. It's a trash tour course. That doesn't mean it's a bad course to play and have fun at, but it's a trash course in the comparison of what tour courses should be. Yes. So it can be both ways of where it can be a fun course to play, but not tour worthy. I will defend USDDC to the day I die. I think obviously did they make some changes that I didn't love that much? I think they really only made the 3 and 4 change. That was the only change I really didn't like, based off of what old 3 and old 4 were. However, I will say this. Hole 3 has maybe the most potential out there of a hole that can be incredible.
Yeah.
They're really close to making that hole really freaking good. And if you look at the score separation on that hole, it wasn't as bad as people thought. Like, yes, a lot of people took pars. And yes, only a handful of people took birdies. But there were a lot of bogeys and there were doubles. So you still had that score separation of where it wasn't just everyone's taking a 4 on this hole.
Yeah.
But they could make it even better of where now you have, 20 guys taking birdie, 30 guys taking par, 30 guys taking bogey, and then, another 20 taking above bogey. I don't like 4. I think it doesn't suit it doesn't make sense to be there. 5's change I thought was great. I love 7-13 too. I love 13. And this is where I'll argue to the day I die. We need to stop being so soft with greens. We need to stop thinking that we should be able to throw a disc anywhere inside of 60 feet and have a wide open putt.
I agree.
That hole was very, very clear what it was asking you to do. It was asking you to throw a tee shot. And this is why I love this hole. There were three for right-handed people. There were three options off the tee. Okay, there was the big hyzer out to the right. There was the forehand hyzer over the landfill. There was the backhand turnover flex over the landfill. The big hyzer and the forehand hyzer were your safe plays, but those were going to put you 450 feet out for me. I was going to have 450 feet into the green.
Yeah.
The backhand flex was going to put me inside of 400 feet. I might have 375 feet and I'd be looking right down the tunnel or right down the gap. But the backhand flex, I get too much over it, I'm OB right. I don't flex it enough, I'm in the trash on the left. There was risk there. And so if you don't want to take that risk, you now have a 450-foot shot, and that's going to be a very, very difficult shot.
Yeah.
And so you can't be upset that, oh man, there's 4 trees right in front of the basket and I hit those trees, or there's trash behind the basket, or if you are 350 feet away, which is what they were trying to make you do, it was a pretty standard mid-range shot out to the right, have it fade in to 20 feet and you have a wide open putt. That is what the hole was requiring you to do. And if you didn't do that, you suffered. Mm-hmm. And I think that was one of the best holes on the course for what it was asking you. Was it the worst looking tee shot on the course? Absolutely. It looked terrible.
Yeah.
But
it was functional.
But for what it was a super challenging hole for players. Yeah. And you had to make a decision what you wanted to do. And I saw people play the hole beautifully and take birdie. And I saw the people play terribly and take double. That's what you want. And I will defend that till the day that I die. Yeah. The thing I won't defend about USDGC, they do not have control. Winthrop can decide, hey, one of our kids
grass length this time,
or one of our kids got hit with a frisbee, or one of the faculty members' cars got dented with a frisbee, or a baseball player hit a ball out of the park and hit a spectator in the head. We don't want the tournament here.
Yeah.
Or you guys have 10,000 people on the grounds now. We can't handle that. We don't want the tournament here anymore. They can decide at any point, you're done. We're done with this. We don't want it here anymore. So that is scary to me. And I wish, this is one of those things where I said the same thing about GMC. I wish you could just like take the course and like grab it and pick it up. The only thing I would do differently though is like when I picked it up, I would take hole 5 and I would shift it and remove hole 16 and I'd put hole 16 where hole 5 is and I'd put hole 5 where hole 16 is and then drop it somewhere else and then boom.
The tough part though, because when I was back there, I was like looking at it with a mindset of like, this tournament, like when I walked onto the premises, I had the mindset this tournament needs to move in the future because of like what you were just saying. Also, just as the sport grows, you know, there's just like, do you want to be playing where it's so obviously not just a disc golf course? Some facets, yes, some facets, no. But what I think is very tough is the amount of parking that you can have at Winthrop is great. I mean, there is thousands of people out there, and it didn't feel packed. It didn't feel like they couldn't handle
more. How was parking for you guys? Pretty easy to come in and park?
Yeah, we had day passes, so we parked down like past where player parking was last year in a field back there, and you just walked up and you're at hole 5. They have the spectator course set up right next to where the day passes park.
Fantastic.
So it was fine. Yeah, and we were the worst parking of it all. So if it was good for us, then I know VIP, they park next to hole 12 and stuff like that. So it was great.
They have that huge area, like you said, for like the little disc golf course for spectators, but they had that huge like tournament village, I guess is what, or championship village, I think is what they're calling it.
Yeah.
With all the food trucks and everything. And it's like,
it's going to be, it doesn't feel super crowded. Yeah. Because like the tournament village was awesome because they also had that big LED screen where you could watch. So like
sick.
Liz and I obviously brought our 2-month-old. So with a 2-month-old, we didn't want to get too close to the cards we were following because we don't want a crying baby to distract anyone. So we were watching from pretty far away. But we could watch him far away, still see what's going on. And then when he needed to eat, it was very easy. We just go into Tournament Village. It's loud in there. People are talking. They don't notice a crying baby if we're changing him or whatever. But there's a screen. We could watch it. So we sometimes sat in the tent and watched it in the tent. Sometimes we watched it on the big screen. And then there was just tons of vendors and food trucks. And they had world champion pizza there. It was incredible. With cannolis. And anyways, so it's just like the whole experience while I'm walking around, like on one hand, I'm like, yes. We need this spot to be somewhere else.
Can you replicate that? Can you do that, though, right now with disc golf?
Like how much land you would need and what you would have to do, like, I don't know. I don't know if I think it needs to move anywhere because, like, the experience as a fan there is so hard to beat elsewhere because you never felt crowded. There was so much for you to do. So, like, if you were – if, like, you know, we showed up and there's, like, some downtime between when FPO was done – and when, you know, MPO lead was going to tee off, we used it to get lunch. Other people were playing that little, like, edge putter course. There was, like, go test how fast you can throw a disc on the speed gun. There was putting tournaments going on. There was a spectator course. There was obviously tons of vending going on. There's so much to do as a fan.
Yeah.
That, like, you could, like, we went out there, and we were out there from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. and never were bored. There was never a moment.
You probably didn't even do everything. Yeah.
No, there was never a moment where I was like, man, you know, just kind of twiddling my thumbs, which that happens at other tournaments. Like there's other tournaments where there's like, all right, well, FPO finished. We got an hour till MPO lead tees off. Like you want to just kind of watch people tee off on one or like you want to go grab some lunch and come back. Like, no, like there was so much I wanted to do that. I was
they keep you on the grounds. Keep you on the grounds. And that's
downtime,
the most important thing. You don't have to leave.
I missed lead card teeing off on 1, 2, and 3. I just caught them on hole 4 and 5. Cause I was like, we were in the championship village. I was talking to, Jomez and I was, you know, doing different stuff in the village. And I was like, we'll catch lead card. Like I got so much going on right now. This is so much fun that like that aspect, I don't know if you can get, if you move it.
I think you see that like the other course that like jumps out at me right now is like Maple Hill. Right. But that to me, they have a lot of questions that they're trying to figure out. Cause like obviously parking was an issue this year for them. And if they want to continue to grow, that does feel crowded.
Yeah.
It does. It does feel like they're trying to put a lot of stuff there, which is awesome. But like you said, it's not separate enough. Like their tournament village or whatever is literally right in between hole 1's tee and hole 18. Like it's very, very close. Where this was like obviously it's kind of close to hole 7, like on the backside, but still pretty far away. the setup there, the setup there seems so good. And like you said too, so many of these courses that we play at, what you just said is so right of where there isn't a question of like, hey, what do you want to do next? It's literally just, let's just watch lead card. And yeah. So that's why when you look at it, there's literally no one else anywhere on the course and everyone's just watching lead card going around and around. This course, you had people posted up on hole one. You had people posted up on hole five. You had people posted up on 16. You had people posted up on seven. You had people posted up on 17. You had people at the tournament village. You had people all over the course. People posted up on 10. There was people posted up all over the place just sitting there watching disc golf because there was ability for them to do that. There was ability for them to go and eat food and then come back. They could go and putt for a little bit if they wanted to have some fun and then come back. Like you said, there were so many options that it really feels like an event. Yeah. And I don't know if we can get there with other things because like that is like something where if you bring a significant other, a friend, someone that isn't like a super diehard disc golfer to that event, they probably can find fun some way. They probably can leave being like, wow, that was actually incredible. Versus if you bring a disc golf, like a non-disc golfer to some other of these events, it's literally you're just watching disc golf. There's nothing else to do.
Because that was the other thing is Liz, my wife, had only been to like Idlewild, Ledgestone, where those are very like, you're there to watch disc golf. Like you're in Northwoods, you're watching disc golf, and you're walking the course. So when I suggested, hey, let's bring Luca, our two-month-old, to USDGC, she was like, no, that sounds terrible. And I was like, what do you mean? I was like, we can put him in a stroller, and we do not have to leave asphalt the entire day. Like, there is walking paths that will take us everywhere we need to go.
She's thinking everything. You're, like, going through woods and, like...
Yeah. And so she's like, really? I was like, yeah. And if we need to feed him, there's literally a whole village that's, like, they're playing music. It's a loud area. We're not going to... Like, there's no chance we distract people with him. And we can watch disc golf and have a good time. And so she was all leery about it. Then we showed up Saturday, and we park, and we start walking. And I, like, was explaining to her. I was like, yeah, you like, we walk from, you know, hole 12... through hole, we watched 17 and 18 from across the water. So we basically walked. No, we didn't. On Saturday, we walked up the hill. And so I told her from 12 up the hill, and then we came down the other side and walked back to our car. I was like, you just walked the whole course. Like, obviously, you didn't see every hole, but that was the whole course. She's like, really? Like, that was it? I'm like, yeah, that's just how the course is laid out. Like, there's so many spots where you can sit and watch, like, three or four holes. And as a spectator, I only move, like, 100 feet. It's like I watched the coming into the green here, the tee shot sideways here, and the tee shot here, and like I didn't really move. And so as a fan, like that's ideal. And that's another thing that I don't think you can get somewhere else because having those asphalt walking paths and parking lots that you're constantly through and you can just flow through the whole course so easily and get from hole 12 to hole 7.
It'd be hard to replicate without a lot of money. It'd be hard to replicate.
That's the college campus aspect where they already have it where you need to be able to get from the Coliseum to wherever. Like you need to be able to park and get different places quickly. So they already have all the asphalt walking paths and trails and everything done. And then the disc golf course is just beautifully designed to flow around it to where
as a spectator, maximize what they have.
Yeah, as a spectator, it was just it's so easy to follow. And I was like, this was the first year I was thinking it from that aspect. And I was like, I think I take it all back. I think we try to stay at Winthrop as long as possible because it's so hard to replicate.
I'm with you too. Like, I think I've changed my mind too. Cause I think we both were on the same page of like, we got to get the course out of here. But it's like, dang, it is actually done really, really well. Yeah. What do you think the chances are, like, convincing Lizzie to, like, come back down next year after she's been 100%. There already? Super easy now.
Super easy. Yeah. Yeah. Because we were literally talking about it Saturday night because Luke has also been going through some, like, stomach issues where he's been fussy a lot. And so Saturday night, she was, like, kind of worried about tomorrow. I was like, well, today kind of went great, though. I was like, tomorrow, I was like, don't you see what I'm saying? Like, even if he's fussy. She's like, yeah. She's like, next year it's going to be so much easier. Like, I didn't have to say anything to her. She's already saying, next year this is going to be so much easier. Idlewild, to get her back to the Midwest, Idlewild, I think I'd have to bribe her. I think I'd have to, like, literally pay her to come with me. Because, like, now that trip there was, like, a tornado warning and stuff happened where she was just terrified out there. Makes sense.
Yeah.
But also, like you were saying, you get out there and, like,
That's a diehard disc golf fan.
We could be at USDGC 4 days, and my wife would enjoy every day.
Yes.
If we're at Ledgestone 4 days, she's going to have fun one of the days. That's about it. And like that's
you have to be a diehard fan.
Yeah.
You have to be a diehard fan. And I think the way that USDGC does it, it sets it up for non diehard fans to still really enjoy themselves.
Yeah.
And that's how you grow it. That's how you get it bigger.
Now,
not everyone going to an NFL football game is going because they are diehard football games. They're going because it's a fun entertainment experience.
Yeah.
Heck, sometimes a lot of people, especially in NFL, you go to a Cowboys game, there's a lot of people there that are not Cowboys fans.
Yeah. There's there for the experience.
You know? A couple things left that we can go over quick, and then I'm ready to hear Silas talk about how he thinks he can shoot plus 20 out there. Nico was in the gallery.
Yes. He was out there.
That, I'm a little surprised by that, mainly because I thought he just wasn't allowed to be at anything PGA.
He's suspended from playing.
So you can still show up.
He can show up.
That's interesting.
That is interesting. You wouldn't.
That seems like a little bit of a loophole there.
I think in Nico's situation, it was fine. You know, he's out there. You know,
yeah. I'm saying though, loophole in the sense of
in
the
rules.
In some
situations, that could be in some situations that could be very dangerous. Maybe not dangerous the right word, but maybe it is the right word.
Well, I got suspended. This is a story a long time ago, but I got suspended from a Ultimate Frisbee tournament, and I wasn't allowed to play, but it was also like I wasn't even allowed to be on the sideline to like help my team. I couldn't be on the ground. Now, why did I get suspended? Do you want to hear the story real quick? People probably want to hear the story.
Really quick.
I want to hear the story.
It was a halftime show at a major league soccer game. And they were basically doing a halftime show for like the three teams from the United States that were going to go compete in the World Championships as kind of like a little, hey, these are the whatever, whatever. So they gave us all little minis to throw into the crowd, right? And obviously, me being who I was at the time, I was like, I'm going to see if I can throw this up in the upper deck. I'm trying to throw this at the very top because everyone else was just kind of like tossing it 10 feet. No one at up high in the stands were getting it. So I was like, I'm going to chuck this thing up to the top. Well, thing was really, really flippy. So if you think about throwing a disc that you think is like a bomber and it's really a roller, it did exactly that. It went straight up, turned into a roller, straight down. And of course, and see, again, it's a funny thing because it's just funny because I know now nothing bad happened, but it of course hit the one like 10-year-old girl square in the forehead.
Oof.
Now, obviously, I went up there, apologized to her, apologized to her dad that was right there. Both of them seemed fine. Beside the fact, though, it was still an awful thing, an awful situation to happen. And this was, you know, USA Ultimate wasn't a huge fan of me because I was anti-spirit fingers. And, you know, they used that as a way of suspending me. But yeah, I mean, I wasn't allowed.
Because of a promotional thing, they suspended you from the tournament.
Yeah, they said I did that. They said that I did that on purpose. So,
I mean, it's unfortunate that it happened, but he did it on purpose. Like, you didn't tomahawk it at someone.
If it was anyone else, there it would not be a situation. It would not be an issue.
Yeah, it just sounds like that's a really unfortunate mistake. But you can see where the line of thought. Like,
yeah, I mean, I immediately ran up into the stands and apologized and was like, so sorry.
Yeah.
You know, so I, turning it all back, I wasn't allowed to be at the tournament at all.
Yeah.
So
now, I can see, again, I think, actually, even for the PDGA, because like you wouldn't want a local guy that got suspended showing back up. Like I said,
no.
Nico was fine out there. Like it was great.
Yeah, he wasn't. I'm sure
with fans, whatever. But you could see where it could be a problem in future situations.
And people can agree or disagree on what Nico did was intimidating and all that stuff. Because that initially what got him suspended, right, was he was intimidating an official. Let's say someone went above and beyond the intimidation thing. And really for everyone was like, yes, that guy 100% was intimidating his card mates, right, at like a C-tier event.
Yeah.
Do you want that person at the next C-tier event just to be standing on the sideline, not talking, not doing anything, just standing watching you?
Yeah.
Like, do you want that to happen? Like, that's why I think it's a little bit of a loophole. Little bit of a loophole.
The tough part, though, is like, is that enforceable? Because a lot of events are at public parks, and like, they didn't get.
Yeah, no, I know. And that's probably why it's a loophole. It's because it's like, how do you tell someone not to be able to at a public park without shutting it down?
Yeah.
Well, that's Dark Horse. I mean, that's not go that far. But
Situations might need to go that far. Nico is not one of those situations, but I will see where that would happen.
I will say, though, Vegas is going to be electric next year with Nico coming back. Yes. I mean, there's going to be so many stories. Gannon, Drew battle. There's going to be so many stories. Next season is going to be incredible.
Absolutely.
Last thing, USDC, I know. Last thing.
There's a
lot. We
got to
talk about the – it is what it is.
Class.
We got to talk about the opening ceremony right now. We have to talk about the opening ceremony.
I didn't see it, so you're just going to have to walk us through it.
I got three things. First off, they started with a prayer.
Yes.
Coming from a Christian myself, super weird. Not sure why the heck we're doing that. No idea why we're doing that. I don't think that's the place to do it. Just going to throw that out there. It'd be the same thing as if you start with some sort of other religion. Like, it's just a weird thing to you're telling everyone this is a mandatory event. Everyone has to show up to this event. And then all of a sudden you just throw religion at them. I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah.
I don't know. And, you know, I think and here's the thing too, is like we at our college team on Frisbee, our ultimate Frisbee team, we did a prayer before every game as well, but it was one of those things that we had discussed with the team saying, hey, we're going to do a prayer. If you want to come join us, by all means, but if you don't feel like you have to.
Yeah.
And so it was a decision for people to make of whether they want to come join our prayer circle before our games or not. And this was just one of those where like, okay, guys, we're starting, and then everyone comes in and starts, and then it's like, okay, we're going to open with a prayer. I just thought – some people really had issues with it.
Oh yeah, I could definitely see issues. I could see where people would have issues with it for sure.
I don't know why we did that.
Yeah.
What by we? I mean, I don't know why that was a thing at USCBC opening ceremony.
Yeah.
Second thing is, why are we reading off tee times like it's high school graduation?
No, that's
that was another unfathomable thing where, like, literally on the third, I think I was staying next to Ezra. And like the third tee time goes out, and he's like, "Wait, are they reading everyone's tee time?" I'm like, "Yep, all 140 names. They're just rolling through them." Last thing, weed gummies. We're in the players pack, and I don't know. There was stuff out there from some of the European players saying like this stuff I think is illegal in our country.
That's funny.
But another thing where it's just like a little bit of a swing and a miss, where it's like, there are a lot of things going well for disc golf and moving the right way, but it still feels like there are some things that like are kind of from the past that's still kind of just like, we don't need to do that. Like that's probably something that.
Well, yeah. Cause I mean, even just think of it this way, right? Cause I know a lot of people think of weed in the modern era, same as like alcohol, you know, like, cause with the decriminalization, a lot of areas and stuff like that, it's kind of what's going on. I feel like it'd be a similar vibe if you got a Bud Light in your players pack. It'd be like, okay, kind of weird. Like, I feel like it'd be
it's different thing. It'd be different if they all they had to do was this. Same thing with the Bud Light thing is players, if you want, we have a bar over there, and you everyone player has two drink tickets.
Yeah,
if you want, that's fine. Versus, because again, it's like you know, the alcohol stuff, right? It's one of those where there could be some people that are recovering.
Yeah.
And the last thing they want to do is go home and open their player pack and they have a beer in their hand.
And then be like, all right. Like, well, they gave it to you. Yeah. No, absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? Like, there's just with those type of things, there's just weird stuff with alcohol and drugs.
Just like, there's just, like you said, make it available.
We're giving you all tickets. Yeah. We're giving you all tickets. If you want to go redeem them, by all means. If you don't, whatever. So
yes,
those were just a couple swing and misses. We talk so highly about USDC. It's not debate night without me throwing in a couple dark horse little things.
Absolutely.
There. And I'm sure some people in the comments are going to be like, oh, Brody, you didn't have to say any of that stuff. No, I did. I did have to say it. Okay. Silas, the floor is yours.
The floor is mine. Oh boy. Well, I know we were talking before you teed off about the whole what do you think I'm shooting out there? And we said, what do we say, plus 27?
Plus 26?
No, we said plus 20. You said you could break plus 20.
You said you could do plus 20. And I agreed, and then I got on the grounds. I don't agree anymore, Silas.
No?
What line do you think you'd be at?
I think I'd be at, like, plus 26.
26. I don't think.
Looking at it, like, what did the worst person shoot? Like, plus 40-something?
Well, you can't. Well, that's across a whole tournament. But but they're good enough to qualify for USDGC.
Yeah.
So
their worst round was 15, and they ended up they shot plus 15, but they also shot like even par or something to get in.
Yeah. No, I'm going 26.
I would say 30 or 35. I'd be like, he's got a chance, mainly because I think you could play the course strategically in a way that you could do it.
Yeah. No, but I'm not trying to play great. I'm just trying to play for the score.
Yeah, so I think 30. If you're playing for the score, I think 30.
What does he get on? What does he get on five, Silas?
Five?
Or sorry, Hunter. What does he get on five?
I think he goes, if he's playing just safe.
Safe. Talk, walk me through it.
He goes really short layup, another short layup, another short layup, jump putt to the water. We'll just.
So that's, he's about to be throwing five.
Five, safe cross layup.
He gets a forehand across first try?
Safe. He's not going to the basket. He's going.
I know, but he gets it across first try?
After four layups? I mean, hopefully he's in a spot he's got clear like 200 feet of water. Yeah.
No, there is no spot like that.
Yes, there is. And you just throw to the right of those trees. Like,
you're saying,
not,
you think he's going all. There's a Mando. There's a Mando.
He's just shy of the Mando, and he's just having a chip shot around the trees.
I don't think he gets there in four shots. He does not get to that Mando in four shots.
Regardless, I think he can get across the water in five layups. I think he can take a seven.
Ooh, I'd put a lot of money on that.
I think he can take a seven.
I'd put a lot of money on the over.
He could also take a nine.
I'd put a lot of money on.
I could also take a six.
I don't think he's taking a six.
Yeah, because just go.
Could you physically take a six? Yes, 100%. You absolutely could take a six.
Can we just do that? Can we just have
instead of across the water is a tough.
Instead of him just playing all 18, can we just have a side bet of him just playing five and just seeing what he shoots on five? Because I will take a lot of money that he does not
play it.
Yeah, the course is open.
Is it open
year round? But it's just not, the ropes aren't up, so there's no.
Size is about to jump in his car and drive down there.
I mean,
So do you have more respect, Silas? Because you had some words. You had some strong words against USDGC coming into the tournament.
You're right.
Are you changed your mind? Are you still feeling what you said was true?
I will say that this tournament is ran very well. You know, I didn't realize that there were, you know, three tournaments essentially going on.
Hate that, but continue.
So like they had it all together. Not gonna lie, the Players Village thing, that was sick. That was very cool. I wish more people, more tournaments would do that, because I know not like hardly any other tournaments probably do that kind of thing.
Several try, but no one executes it the way.
Yeah,
it's like that was sick.
Exactly. They try. And they have like food trucks and stuff, and they try to have like a little thing. But European Open was pretty decent.
Okay.
But yeah,
that's what kind of disappoints me a little bit, is that like this is like the tournament that. One of the only tournaments that this is actually successful at, and
it's good,
other
man.
Tournaments aren't. So that was really good. You know, I mean, the course was good. The course was good. I like the OB thing. So the rocks, whatever. But I like the rope and the little trench thing, and I like the grass cut. The grass cut was a big one. I've never seen that before.
What's the rope and the little trench thing? What is that?
Yeah, they dug a little trench and then put a rope in.
Dug the rope into the ground.
Oh, yeah. So
that's pretty cool.
Instead of being on top. Yeah. That's good.
Nice touch. Hole four. Hole four was a little interesting.
The gauntlet.
Just like the tunnel shot. For the spectators, they had us like way back. So like we couldn't even see what
Yeah, you guys were on the road, right?
Was pretty much
yeah
there was a little spot revealed, but you weren't
so you couldn't see you couldn't see a good shot versus a bad shot. Yeah, you just wait for it to hit
like,
a tree.
Yeah, exactly. So that was a little like, eh, I wish we could be a little closer.
How was that on coverage? How did it look good on coverage? Like shooting
fine.
Right behind?
Yeah. I mean, I hate the hole, but the coverage over
Yeah, fine. Yeah. I'm just saying as long as you can see what's going on coverage.
What was great on coverage was, and I told Silas and Travis when they showed up, the grass length being different, it played well in person, but on coverage, it was incredible.
Well, I'm assuming coverage was good this week since I mean, I didn't watch it because I was kind of in the mix. I watched some of FPO, but I'm assuming it was good since you didn't have any hot takes coming in on coverage.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched – obviously, the last 2 days I was there, but I still watched coverage like on the screens. I didn't get to hear much commentary, but like, I mean, there's always mistakes with coverage, right? Like, there's always something.
Yeah.
They stay too long on a shot, cut too early.
That
blah,
one
blah,
thing
blah.
Was that one thing was the worst thing ever. Was like the slow pan of the commentators. What are we doing? Why are we doing that?
The commentary shot though. Look,
the commentary shot was so nice.
Yeah.
But when they went to like
look good too.
When they went to like the B-roll shot and they would like low and they slow pan it across.
That's what I'm
like,
saying. There's some stuff.
I'm like, that's unnecessary.
It was also cool that they had the
you don't need
like,
hero shots of the commentators.
The keyhole stream where you could like watch.
I love
the four holes.
I love
nonstop.
That.
Yeah. Was like one. Was it 1-5?
Dude,
17,
were they
something like that?
Were they utilizing that a lot in coverage of showing like random people playing those holes?
That's a great question. I mean, day one they definitely jumped around a ton, but the last days I didn't watch coverage enough because I was on the grounds to see how much
they had.
They had Paige Shoes ace.
Yeah,
or whatever.
They definitely had aces. Like,
so that was cool.
They could caught that. Yeah. They have obviously if you ace, they're going to show that. But like, it'd still be cool to be like Nate Sexton, for example, right?
Yeah,
he was out of it, so he's not going to be in the mix. But it'd be cool to pop him on when he's playing 17. To be like, oh, looks like Nate Sexton is going to, you know, get another top 10. You know, like use those to kind of fill in. I just didn't know if they've done that yet. I think that's the future is like have those stationary cams there all the time. And so you're gaining all this coverage you can then go and be like, earlier today, check out what this person did on hole 7 and 17 versus like not having anything.
Yeah.
I do have some complaints though.
Oh,
gosh.
Let's get the complaints.
First of all, the parking situation was fine, but one thing that kind of threw me off and that wasn't stated in the email or anything that we got with the day passes was you have to go to the ticket box.
I disagree. I'm gonna read this email because I didn't have a problem with it at all. I was able to do it first try, no question about it.
In me and Trevor's head.
Okay, here you go. Let me read the first line of this email, Silas. Ready? You'll be required to check in at the USDGC box office upon arrival.
Yeah.
The box office is located left past the front entrance.
Okay.
I could read that both ways. I'll take Silas's thing. I think that's open-ended for...
But then they give you a map, and it says you are here, which is where the box office is, and then this is where you're parking. And there's directions to get to where you're parking.
Well, and it's also directions to get to the box office.
No, it's turn right on Eden Terrace at the stop. Turn right on University Drive at the roundabout.
Like nowhere was that stated.
This is in the email, my guy.
I know, but I don't know if that's clear enough. I don't know if that's clear enough to like. I would probably do what Silas did. I would probably park and then go
parked.
And try to get my tickets.
Yeah, and right, like we couldn't park because we didn't have our tickets. We had to have our tickets to park, and so the guy was like, "Hey, you got
to
go back."
Because he said, "How to receive your pass on the day of the purchase round? Go to the USDGC box office at the office, print out." View the, like show them this, and then day pass parkings right after that. There will be very limited on site nearby satellite lots.
I think they should just probably put something in quotes that say, "We'll not be able to park until you go." Like there should have been something there because what other event do you go to where
exactly.
you get your tickets
That's
first and then park?
Well, because
That's
that the
point.
Tickets determined where you're parking.
Well, like
you
already
had
to
show
your ticket on
to park,
your phone,
so you had to show
therefore,
like the,
you
didn't
no,
have a ticket.
You
on
already
your phone.
Have your ticket on your phone.
No, you didn't.
They should just be able to scan that and then give you the wristband.
But Hunter, there's a lot of places.
Some day passes you could park in VIP. Day one, I parked in VIP.
Well, that's not legal.
Because as the VIP parking, like if you showed up late enough in the day, if VIP parking was full. Day pass, you could park in VIP. So they didn't know where you were parking yet until you showed up.
Well, that's not right.
How's that not right?
Because you didn't pay for VIP parking.
Well, no, but VIP was the lot was full. I showed up when the round was like midway in and they knew there's plenty of spaces over here, you can park here.
That's another thing, is if you're paying for VIP parking, you should be receiving
a VIP parking
pass. You're
paying for a VIP pass that includes parking.
Right. So the day passer shouldn't be parking in the VIP
lot. I know is I read it and I didn't once question it. I was like, oh, I go pick up my passes.
Have you been to another sporting event?
No, Silas. That was my first ever sporting event.
That's my point, though. Surely you can see that.
I read the email. I think it was pretty clear.
It wasn't, because it wasn't actually stated in the email.
Okay.
So, next one. Was that a baseball practice going on at FPO?
No. Well, they had a game, too.
Game. It was a game, not a practice. And they were blaring music. At, you know, we're trying to have a disc golf tournament over here. On a Sunday, too.
I mean, a college baseball game hierarchy is going to be a little bit higher than
right, exactly. But at least kind of try and work around that scheduling wise. I mean, I'm sure
I think it's more the other way around.
Probably, we're trying to work around them. I'm sure
trying, and we. I think they probably are like, well, this is the only time we can do it. There's one baseball game. I think there's also a soccer game.
Yeah, that's just the downside.
Game,
yeah. There's just
which I posted in the group chat saying how I don't know if you guys saw it, but I was like, it's funny. The commentators right now are trying to make it sound like, oh, there was a huge roar somewhere on the course. Something crazy probably happened. And it's like, that was clearly a soccer. That's clearly from soccer. You can hear constant yelling and stuff, like what you would hear at a soccer game, and then you'd hear a big roar. But it was funny, the commentators would try to make a spin on it, being like, oh, something crazy probably must have happened at the
I will say
that
the crowd on the Ace was really loud.
The crowds are big out there.
The crowd was great. We could hear it all the way from the Village all the way up to hole one.
Crowds are big, man. Crowds are big out there.
So that
was awesome,
exciting. And then one other thing was the green on 18. So I don't I couldn't see
anything. Not a good finishing. Not a good finishing
thing. I guess you could go around to three's tee, but I mean,
what do you think, Hunter? What do you think? Do you think there's a chance that they, because the OB kind of right now, how 18, right? It goes down the right-hand side and then curls the back, mm-hmm. and then kind of goes over into those trees. What if it went down the right-hand side, curls, and then just went down to the water, not back into the trees? They clear out all those trees in the back, and maybe they put some spectator grandstands or something back there.
Well, the tough part because, is then you're asking Winthrop to be able to clear trees.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know. I think that might be the biggest.
It's one of those
biggest issues.
I agree.
Is like
18 greens brutal.
It's
if
not
you're
a
in
good
the front row. You're not seeing.
It's not a good finishing hole.
The tough part is it's a great finishing hole for the players.
Fantastic finishing hole.
But so it's one of those where they weigh the balance of they've previously tried moving it back in the middle of the fairway.
Terrible.
It sucked, but it was great for the spectators. All the spectators could see. You could gather around it, and so they tried that, but it seems like they made the decision we need it to be better for the players and the spectators, you got to kind of deal with it. But couldn't they
put more? I think they got to put grandstands. They got to put grandstands on the right. That's what they have to do.
That would definitely help.
Because right where they have player scoring, get player scoring out of there.
Yeah.
Put player scoring in the shack.
Yeah. There were people going into the lost found discs.
I'm not surprised. I think that needs to be all. That needs to be all stadium seating.
Yeah, that would definitely help.
Because then if you get people stacked up, then you can see down.
Because right now, you have to decide when they get to 18. Do I want to be on the green or do I want to watch the approach shots? Because you can't do both. Right. Because by the time you get to the green, it's already gonna be three rows deep. Or if you're on the green, you can't see the shots from people driving and approaching it. What I did is I watched from across the water, and as soon as he threw approach shot, I just looked down at my disc golf network and watched the approach shot come in.
Yeah.
Not the most ideal way to do it, but
yeah,
it was good for me.
I will say the last 2 years we've been lucky to where the deciding factor has come on hole 17, essentially, right?
Yeah.
With Paul's big putt last year, Gannon's big putt this year, basically made 18 kind of we haven't had one in the last 2 years where like someone cashes in like that 45 footer for the win on 18, where it's like you would want to have a lot of people seeing that. But yeah, I agree with you on that, Silas. Hole 18's green, not great for spectators. Yeah.
But I mean, that's pretty much all.
It could be though. It could be.
Yeah. That's pretty much all of the complaints I had.
What would you rate it out of 10 now that you've been there?
We said this on the vlog. I think I said like an 8.3.
8.3. Okay.
All
right. That's respectable.
I think that's what I said.
That's a lot higher than you probably thought it was going to be going into that weekend.
What's that?
I said that's probably higher than you thought it was going to be going into the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I knew it was going to be good.
Yeah.
But I will say, it was interesting watching FPO because I'd never watched FPO before.
Yeah.
And live,
In person. Oh, and one more thing is just seeing people in person is just totally different. Like Corey Ellis, that dude is tall.
Yeah.
Like I did not know he was so tall.
That's what everyone says when they see Corey for the first time.
And like Emerson Keith, he's short.
Very short.
He's as short as I thought he was. But I mean that was just super interesting to see. And just like you see shots on coverage and you're like, oh, that's a good shot. But you see shots in person, you're like, wow, that's a great shot.
Yeah.
So it was really cool to be down there. And all that stuff. And it's really cool to see everyone that, you know, came up and said hi.
Final question to you from me. Do you still think it needs to move from Winthrop?
Yeah, I think it has to.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, long term, yeah, it's got to. You can't say, yeah, there's just too much. There's too many things that could go wrong. Too many things that Winthrop could say, like, hey, we want to build a new building right here. Boom. You know. You got to get rid of hole five or, you know, whatever. So that kind of thing. But I will say the FPO, watching FPO gave me hope because those people were like half my size and they were throwing further than me. And so I was like, man, some way I got to be able to throw further.
That's
so
amazing.
But props to them because they throw freaking far.
That's great. That was funny. All right, let's wrap this thing up pretty quick. I think we talked through the tour championship and then touch on the survey really quick, and hopefully we can do it before Silas has to leave to go to class. Probably not.
What's our time frame?
Like what, 15 minutes?
Yeah. Okay, we can do it. We can crank it out.
Tour championship, Brody, I'm just going to ask really quick. A, how do you feel about the format? B, with the qualifying thing or a play-in event going on tomorrow, can you still practice the course? Tomorrow.
Yes. Okay. And you can still practice the course. Like, so if you're in the semis, if you're like the top four guys, you can still practice course every day.
Nice.
How
do you feel about the course? Do you get to play it again?
Completely changed my mind.
Oh, okay.
First time was on Sunday or Saturday last week, I guess.
Yeah.
I walked through it when I walked through it and a lot of holes, like I had no idea what I was even doing. So I was like, I'm not going to throw a shot because I don't know if it goes right or left. So I just walked the course a lot. Interesting enough, when we were out filming yesterday, Simon did the same thing. He walked the course, no discs in his hand or anything, just walked it. I think that's a real good way of seeing courses for the first time. But I will say it played a lot better than I thought. Nice. I was very down on the course after walking it the first time. Changed my mind. But I will say it does feel like almost whoever designed the course started getting a little tired around on the back nine. That's what it feels like. I feel like the front nine's very good. I like the front nine a lot. Back nine, eh. And then the biggest thing is hole 18. I think they messed up one thing on hole 18 is they made a mando. I don't know if you can pull up – if you want to pull up the
– caddy book.
The caddy book, so you can kind of have an idea. Maybe you can, maybe, I don't know. Size, can we throw stuff on the screen or no?
Yeah, should be able to.
Can you like maybe screenshot it and send it to Silas or something so you can throw it up there so we can talk about
it?
We can put it up in post.
Okay, hole 18's caddy, hole 18. When I first saw it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. Because initially, how they had 17, 18. was terrible. I did not like 17 and 18 when I first walked through it.
Yeah.
They basically combined 17 and 18 to make an epic par four to finish it. And I was like, this is going to be incredible. But they have, okay, it's an L-shaped hole. Okay. So it go, the fairway goes up.
That's the wrong caddy book, Silas.
The fairway goes up and then it goes sharp turn to the left. Okay.
Okay.
And this all to the left is all OB. So initially I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be incredible. You're going to have people being super aggressive if they need to on 18, trying to cut off. And it's uphill too. The tee shot's uphill.
Okay.
Trying to cut off all this OB and trying to get way up there because it is a tough, it is a long hole. And if they don't clear everything, they just threw OB the whole time and like their tournament's over, right? Yeah. They're probably going to lose. But they made a Mando on this tree. So now the only play is everyone to throw the big hyzer. And like me and Ezra threw, I mean, granted, we were a little bit tired. So maybe we can throw a little bit further when we're fresh. But we threw pretty good hyzer pushing backhands. And our next shot was 480 feet to a green that's surrounded by OB.
Yeah.
And so that's where I was just like, oh, that's just me being a little nitpicky. That's where I love where it's like, don't make that OB. Make players have to decide if they want to play the safe hyzer shot up there or if they want to try to chew off and chuck it over OB because it's a risk-reward shot. That's what I love. Yeah. I love risk-reward shots. And but yeah, I've completely did a 180 on the course. I think it overall it's kind of like what we talked about before where if you're just looking at it as a course, it's a great course, a lot of fun. Front nine, great tour course. Back nine, not so much.
Gotcha. Makes sense. All right. Well, that's good to hear.
The hole 17, one of the best. Hole 17 is one of the best par fives too.
Great.
On tour, so that's a great hole too. So the finishing two holes, even though there is a Mando on 18, the finishing two holes are good.
Awesome. So that's very exciting. We'll obviously next week talk through
35K on the line.
Yeah, 35 grand to the winner for MPO and FPO. Next week we'll obviously talk through the recap of it, and we're gonna have a preview show on Grip Locked. We'll fill out the brackets and finish our points for Grip Lock with the predictions. I don't think I'm catchable, but
you guys should do it to where it's like you actually get points.
We're gonna get points
like March Madness.
Yeah, like if you pick someone out of the first round, it's 1 point. Second round, 2, 3, 4 type thing. So there's a lot of points on the line.
You should have a combo in there though. You should have a combo. Because
like if you
someone
from the first round all the way through and you picked them.
No. I think combo per round. So like if you like you should there should be a bigger difference between someone that got one right and someone that got three right than two points. Yeah, if you get all four right, like there should be some sort of multiplier of where you get all four. If you get three of four, there should be a multiplier. So that way there's a little bit more points on the board. So it can be a little bit more exciting.
If we do that, I might be catchable, which would be great. Make it more exciting. But yeah, I think last thing we wanted to touch on was the PDGA survey.
We gotta talk about this survey real quick. We gotta talk about this.
So
what is going on?
How it was originally proposed with the email we got was last Tuesday. You get an email as a PDGA member, but essentially it seemed like they were going to be surveying what everyone thought of transgender players in FPO. That's what it seemed like the survey was going to be on. And the first
so is that just one question?
The first two pages were essentially that. It was just like from like strongly disagree to strongly agree, you know, different questions regarding that topic. The rest of it seemed a lot more just like a what's our demographic? Where do our members lean on issues on like different things?
And like the rest were they more like, political, like political questions?
A lot of them had like political back end ties, but some of them were literally like, "What's more important when raising a child for them to be?"
I saw that one.
Considerate or well behaved? And I'm like,
what does that mean?
What is that question? I want my children to be considerate and well. I think if my child is well behaved, they are considerate, and I think if they're considerate, they're probably well behaved.
No. We had an argument on this, and that's not correct.
Okay, well, regardless, they're both important. So like how you pick one or the other.
I won't go into it. They are both important, but yes, if you are well behaved, you are not considerate. You don't have to be.
Yeah, that's true. You don't have to be. But like
if you're considerate, you are well behaved.
If it's an either or question, It was confusing to me because I'm like,
yes,
I kind of want, I want both.
It should be like polar opposites.
Yeah. I was like, you would think either or like, question. Is it more important? Like one was like, yeah, do you, and something, I forget what they were, but they yeah, weren't, you, they were never polar want, opposites.
Do you want your child to be smart or physically able? It's like,
both.
I would like both, please.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a lot of those questions where you're like, both, how am I supposed to pick this? And also, why does this matter in the scope of things? Like, it was obvious they were trying to get about like how their was demographics think through like critical thing, but it was just very confusing because that's not what the survey was posed as. It was posed as, we're getting your opinion on this, which was like, it was going to be like a 2-page survey, like very easy this. And then the rest of it went like, one was literally, where do you stand politically? Like 0 was super far left, 10 or 7, I forget what the scale was super far right. And like, it was like, answer from 0 to 10, where do you stand politically? I was like, what does that have to do with any
was
of
there
this?
Was there a point where you're like, am I like, you just forgot that you were taking like a disc golf survey? It was like, there's a point where you're just like, wait a second, like where am I?
I was reading every question and like it just got farther and farther away from what I thought the survey was. And it's like every question I read out loud, I'm like, what am I being asked right now? Like what is like, I feel like I'm being profiled or something. I don't know what's going on. Like I they're trying to learn so much random stuff that I was like, I'm curious what they're going to do with this, because then someone on the PDGA medical committee put a reel on Instagram and basically said that their decision's already made. They already have all the research and everything they need. And like the medical committee, which just recommends to the board of directors what the decision should be, and the board of director makes the rule, the medical committee is not even really using this survey to make their ruling on transgender players in FPO. So it was like even more of a question of like, is
why,
what is this? What the feel I got was the PDGA wanted to know what like their demographic was before they made a decision, so they know what pushback's going to come from where. That was the feel I was getting. I don't know if that's right at all, but that was the feel I was getting. They were like, let's just take a broad survey so we know exactly who signed up for the PDGA, and then we can kind of predict. It seemed like a very, like, the PDGA doesn't want to be in the wrong, so they're trying to figure out how to be friends with everybody, and so they want to know, okay, who are we trying to be friends with? Versus just, like, okay, let's make an informed decision, and, like, no matter, because the deal is, no matter what decision's made, someone's upset. There's there's no way around it. No matter what decision's made, some group of people is going to be upset. And yes. I think what it felt like to me was the PDGA was like, we don't want anyone to be upset. We want everyone to love us. We are great. Let's figure out who all our people are so we don't upset anyone. That's what it felt like to me. I don't know. I could be completely off on it, but it also came from the person who like sent it out was the guy who, the jerk move guy.
I heard, yeah.
And
people tweeted me about
was talking
that.
About Paige getting roasted behind the scenes. I don't know why that guy's still affiliated with the PDGA.
Yeah, I thought he was gone.
He was
what
president.
Happened?
He was
he's
president.
Back?
He was president of the board of directors. He stepped down, and now he's in like a volunteer position at the PDGA. But like, why is that guy still in our sport? Like, I don't.
But he was the one that created the survey, right?
Yeah, he was the one facilitating the survey.
That seems like a pretty big job for like a volunteer to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. The PDGA fascinates me.
I'm not trusting anyone coming in and volunteering for us to do anything important.
No. Yeah, I don't.
The heck?
The survey was very, I mean, I think it's more so they didn't tell us exactly what the survey was going to be is why there was so much shock when you opened it.
Yeah.
Because like if you understood the survey going in, then the questions made sense. But when you were told this survey's on, you know, transgender players in FPO, the first 2 pages, I'm like, yep, these questions make sense. Answer, 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 answer. Then you get to like page 3, I'm like, okay, this is kind of weird, but I kind of still get where they're going. And then eventually it's like, how are you raising your child? And I'm like, okay, now how do we get from point A to point B? Like where, you lost me in the middle here. Like that, yeah. I didn't understand that.
It'd be interesting to see what the listeners think of it.
I'm curious, like, are they gonna post these results? Like, I don't know. I want to know what the PDGA is gonna do with this information. Like, it was a very, very confusing sequence of events.
Probably sell it for a lot of money.
Maybe they're using it to sell to advertisers so that like their disc golfer magazine, they have a better, you know, demographic, you know. When they're going to advertisers, I don't know what's going on.
They go to what's that gun company that sponsors a lot of like podcasts, like Colt, they're a coffee company.
Black Rifle.
Yeah, Black Rifle. They go to Black Rifle. And they're like, look, 70% of our 70% of our members think it's their right to own a gun. Yeah. Like, you need to throw some money at us.
Yeah.
Hey, if that's it, that PGA might be the smartest company in the world.
Yeah.
Maybe. Also, were they able? Because obviously, if we ask these questions before, like on an interview, like if we were interviewing someone for a job at Foundation, and we were like, you have to answer these questions, I think we could get sued. I think we would be liable.
Probably, but it wasn't a mandatory survey.
That's what I'm saying. Because it's a survey.
Yeah, you were choosing. Is that
like
the
loophole that they can? Yeah. My point is, like, the questions that were being asked, you cannot force people to answer those questions.
It was a voluntary survey. So, like,
and that's why they can get
away
with
it. All members have to take it. I saw a lot of people saying they weren't taking it. But yeah, so because you can walk up on the street and ask anyone anything.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Like, I could walk up and ask them, like, because, like, something with, like, oh, have you had a knee surgery? Like, obviously, you can't force me to say that because that's a HIPAA violation. Mm-hmm. But if I'm like, yeah, I've had a knee surgery, I haven't. But, like, that's me volunteering that information. It's my information to volunteer. So voluntarily taking that survey. Yeah, if they would have said to stay a PDGA member, it's mandatory you do this.
Mm-hmm.
That probably would have crossed the legal line, yes.
Caused some problems.
Yeah, but I don't know. It was fascinating. Hey, if you didn't take it as a PDGA member, I would advise at least look it up. I also think on Reddit someone posted a link to all the questions. I think you can find that. So if you're just curious, you're not a PDGA member, and you want to see what the heck everyone's talking about.
I will say this.
Let me read a few of the questions. I found the...
Do you want my answers or no?
So, like, it asks, like, what the following best describes you? What best describes you? Like, I play in PDGA events. Like, where you stand within the PDGA? Like, are you on the Pro Tour? Blah, blah, blah. Like, are you... Like, they have options. I'm a woman, transgender woman, man, transgender man, non-binary, identify. So, like, that... Those questions all made sense at the beginning. Highest degree of school made sense still. And then it gets to, this is where it starts. So, like, this is the last page that's like, I was understanding. So, it's like, do you have a family member, close friend, acquaintance who is gay/lesbian? Yes or no? Do you have a family member, close friend, or acquaintance who is transgender? Yes or no? Those, the questions up to that point all made sense for the scope of the survey. Then the next one was like, here's a 7-point scale on the political views that might be a range from extremely liberal left to extremely conservative right. Where would you place yourself on the scale? How many times do you attend religious services or ceremonies at your place of worship? And then how strongly do you agree or disagree with the following statements? It's disrespectful for a man to swear in front of a woman. Like, these were questions I started going, now, where does this have to do with
what
we're taking?
What is going
on? There's, like, this one. There are some professions and types of businesses that are more suitable for men than women. It bothers me more to see a woman who is pushy than a man who is pushy. Like, now it's just going, like, are you sexist? And, like, so it just went, like, it went from, where do you stand on this? Like, okay, are you sexist? To then, like, the world is changing and we should adjust our moral views. The newer lifestyle might... are contributing to the breakdown of our society. Like, it slowly just shifted to a political survey.
You know what they might do? They might throw all these things. Because my buddy's really good at Excel and he's shown me stuff like you can do in Excel. I bet they do this. I bet they chuck all these answers in there. Then they make like this little formula that says like anyone that answered these ways on these questions – throw their answers out.
That's what I was thinking.
They don't.
I mean, that would
they
be
don't count.
Wrong, obviously, but
yeah,
they
but like all
could.
All the sexist bigots, throw their answers out. We don't care what they think, and let's just see what we're left with and see what those people think. They might be doing that. That might be what they're doing.
But when you're trying to survey your whole demographic, I don't think the decision on whether or not transgenders should play in FBO should have anything to do with just the mass opinion of the people. Like, it
correct.
Should be based on
correct.
Science.
Correct.
So
correct.
Let's start there. But if you're like, hey, we want to get the mass opinion of the people, then you're getting the mass opinion of the people. It's not like, well, we don't want to hear from you. Whoa. No. We just want to hear from you. Like, because then, of course, you're going to – like, if you use this to pick and choose, you can look at all the answers of every other question and probably know how they answer the first few questions, realistically.
Isn't there a saying, something like that, of
don't
where
throw the
it's
baby
like...
out with the bathwater? That might not be it. That's a different phrase.
Not. No,
that
there
was the
something.
Mind.
No, there was some sort of saying of like, not, you know, it goes along with like history, kind of don't let history repeat itself kind of thing, of where if all we're doing is like, oh, whatever the masses, like whatever the most people think, that's what the best thing is. Like, that is not the best way of going about life.
No.
Of where it's just like, was it groupthink, right? Is that what I'm thinking of? Of where like everyone just like hive mind. They all think the same way. And so it's like, okay, that's what the best thing is. When you have some brilliant person over here being like, hey, there's a better way of doing this.
Yeah. Like, or like someone with a different perspective that can see something that the masses just don't see. It's like,
yeah, I just feel like there's been a lot of times in history where everyone jumps on something. And then like later in life, we're like, that was not a good idea.
Yeah.
Like that we messed that one up. So I'm with you on that. It's like, we shouldn't probably whatever side it's on. If there's a 90% people saying it should go this way or the 90% people saying it should go that way, I'm with you in agreeing that I don't think that's what the PDGA should be looking at to being like, that's what we're going to do.
Yeah. And then these are the children questions. Please tell us which one's more important for a child to have, obedience or self-reliance? And it's like, tough one. Tell us which one is more important for a child to have, curiosity or good manners? And I'm like, that's what these questions start getting, where I'm like, I want my child to be curious and I want my child to have good manners.
Well,
they're two completely different spectrums to me.
Cause that's the thing. It's like, would you rather, cause now I'll pose it this way. Would you rather have a curious child that has terrible manners or a good manners child that's brain dead?
Yeah. It's like, how do you decide that? Cause
if you go that way, it's like,
cause the option's obvious. You can have both. Like a child with good manners can still have a great imagination and be very curious.
Yeah.
And like, so why do you have to pick one or the other? Like, they're both vital. Please tell us which is more important for a child to be considered well-behaved.
Can we get Trevor, can Trevor get this guy on his podcast and ask why, like,
I want to go
through, I want to go through and hear like the reasoning of these questions. Like, sir, why do you care if I want my kid to be curious or well-behaved?
Well,
I want to hear that question.
I want to know why those are superimposed against each other. Like, it has to be something where, like, maybe if you think this way about, like if you have X set of morals or, like, values or whatever, there must be one you value more than the other. Like, there's got to be a reasoning behind the question. But, like, it's not a black and white question. Like, it's a very, like...
Is this like the Amazon thing where they can like track what you're doing online, so then they know exactly what like makes you go, so then they give you an ad for something and you're like, oh my God, I gotta buy that. Like, is it they're trying to like ask us questions to where they know how we think?
I think that's definitely what they're
doing. Are we in the Matrix?
Yeah,
we could be in the Matrix.
We're definitely in a simulation to start off with. But no, it was a fascinating survey, and I think that the reason people, because like the questions themselves, if you would have known you were going into a survey like that, the questions would have made sense. You'd be like, okay, yeah, you're asking about like, okay, I get it.
Personality.
When you're going into a survey,
it's like
that
a Miles
you
Briggs
was about
test.
A, and then 90% of the survey was about B, I was like,
throws you off.
Yeah, I think that's what it threw everyone off. Everyone's just like, why do you need to know any of this? That's not what you're asking me about. But
Go ahead.
I still stand that the PDGA shouldn't be basing their ruling on the opinion of the masses, because like they should just be looking at strictly science facts. You know, realistically, what they should be doing is like, when player A meets our standards here, is there still an advantage? And if that is true, then we need to change our standards here. That's what should be going on. It's like, if player A meets these standards, first off, make sure player A does meet the standards, because that's not even happening in the PGA. Whole different thing. But player A meets these standards. Is there still an advantage? If the answer is yes, we rework the standards until there is no – like that, that to me is what should be going on in this line of thought. Like, that's it. And there shouldn't be like, okay, are all the masses okay with what's going on right now? Like, that's irrelevant. But I think that people – they just don't upset people. And like, you're going to upset someone. No matter what happens, people are going to be upset. So you just got to make the right decision. That's all you got to do. Whatever the right decision ends up being, you got to make it and roll with it and just deal with the backlash. So, fascinating, fascinating thing. We'll talk about it more on Grip Locked, I'm sure. But, all right, Brody, I think that's the
Thursday,
show. Thursday,
7 p.m., Twitter. See you there.
See y'all there. Hopefully, we'll be hearing about how great your round was and how you're ready to play on Friday, Thursday night, too.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, this is a course that I can either shoot 5 under or 15 over, so.
Be fascinating. We'll see what happens. All right. We'll talk to you all Thursday night and then back here Tuesday night. Brody will actually – nope, you won't be in studio. You will be in studio Tuesday when we film.
It's not nighttime, baby.
There we go. Boom. All right. We'll talk to you next week. Nope, later this week. Jeez, that was almost bad.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.